Choice is run at some point, I think, in this afternoon.
And it's significant. He is called Omar Fateh, the Mamdani of the Midwest, but of Mamdani himself. And President Trump saying overall, he wrote, Trump wasn't on the ballot and shutdown were the two reasons that Republicans lost elections tonight. He refers to himself in the third person, the shutdown and that he himself wasn't on the ballot.
I mean, I just heard the excerpts from his speech earlier in the program, and when he said, you know, I am an immigrant, that that's such an important part of his win, of his victory, and that was very striking. First, because of the Islamophobic campaign that really was ran against him in the final weeks of the campaign. Also, because as you mentioned a few minutes ago, there was the first Muslim woman to win a statewide office anywhere in the country. That really stands in as a companion result, given that context. But also because we saw the topic of immigration and ICE, and obviously Trump's agenda around those issues, be very important around the country. Just as one example, the Republican nominee for governor. Okay, well, there were a lot of races where immigration was on the ballot and a big issue, and that's what I was going to end with.
Daniel Nishanian, you got a lot in there. Editor-in-chief of Bolts. We'll link to your coverage of the elections at democracynow.org. I'll be in St. Louis Friday night. Check our website, democracynow.org.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 980 Oregon, a public service helping those who are feeling sad, struggling with alcohol or drug use, or just need someone to talk to. Trained counselors are able to listen and provide support 24/7. Confidential support is available by text or phone call to 988. More information is available at 988oregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Democrats come out strong in Tuesday's special election results.
California passes Proposition 50, allowing for mid-decade redistricting.
And the Metro Council approves $500,000 in contingency funding for food security as SNAP monies lapse.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 5th, 2025. I'm Jezaniah Hawthorne.
And I'm Josh Salem. Here in Portland, voters just approved a 75% increase in the city's parks levy. It should pay for nearly half of the Park Bureau's operating budget. Washington County voters approved increases to property taxes funding public safety and libraries. Across the U.S., Democrats had a big night. In New York City, Democratic Socialist Zoran Mamdani won the mayoral race, defeating former Governor Andrew Cuomo by 8 percentage points. Mamdani is the first Muslim mayor of New York City. His campaign broke records with the number of doors they knocked on to get out the vote, 3 million since the primary. Mamdani championed affordability for the city's residents. Trump critic and Democrat Mikey Sherrill will be New Jersey's next governor. And in Virginia, former Democratic Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger will be the state's first woman governor. Democrats flipped two seats in the Mississippi legislature, ending the Republican supermajority.
California voters approved new congressional district boundaries yesterday, which may help determine which party wins control of the U.S. House of Representatives in 2026. And that might give the Democrats the ability to thwart much of Donald Trump's upcoming agenda. The approval of Proposition 50 gives Democrats a chance to win up to 5 additional House seats. That could offset a move by Texas Republicans to redraw Texas maps to try to pick up to 5 more GOP seats. The Texas plan comes at Trump's urging. In fact, there has been a host of redistricting efforts around the country, with Republican states making the larger effort. Right now, the Republicans hold a slim House majority, 219 to the Democrats, 213. California's Proposition 50 called for suspending House maps drawn by an independent commission and replacing them with revamped districts adopted by the Democratic-controlled legislature. The new districts will be in place for the 2026, 2028, and 2030 election. The recast districts should dilute Republican voters' power in one case by uniting rural, conservative-leaning parts of Northern California with Marin County, a heavily liberal coastal stronghold.
Proposition 50 won a swift and decisive victory, with the Associated Press declaring a winner as soon as polls closed statewide. With 75% of the votes counted, 64% of voters supported the plan and 36% opposed it. An AP poll showed roughly 7 in 10 California voters felt party control of Congress was very important, and those voters overwhelmingly supported the measure. About 8 in 10 California voters who supported the ballot measure said it was necessary to counter the changes made by Republicans in other states. Very few said they supported it because it was the best way to actually draw maps. Donald Trump overwhelmingly lost California in his 3 presidential campaigns. Congressional district boundaries are typically redrawn every 10 years, reflecting population shifts documented in the census. Mid-decade redistricting is unusual, absent a court order finding fault with the maps already in place. In addition to Texas, Republicans expect to gain 1 seat each from new maps in Missouri and North Carolina, and potentially 2 more in Ohio. 5 other red states are also considering new maps: Florida, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, and Nebraska. On the Democratic side, Colorado, Illinois, Maryland, New York, and Virginia have all discussed proposals to redraw maps, but major hurdles remain.
The Trump administration called election results in California into question, even before the results came in. Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt called California's election system fraudulent, but offered no evidence to support that claim. KPFA's Lauren Schmidt sat down with California Secretary of State Dr. Shirley Weber to talk turnout, transparency, and truth in California's elections.
16, we heard the same comment that the election was going to be rigged. It was going to be this, going to be that. But then who won? They still said it was rigged and there was fraud. We get the same comments in 2020 when the White House was stormed and afterwards and before it. We've had this ongoing conversation every year about the fraud and deception in California. We've gone to court several times, and in every case, it has been proven there is no fraud, there is no deception of any significance in California or in any state in the union because of our system and how our folks vote and the care that we take in making sure that happens. We got the same information this morning, and I responded to the White House as well as to the current president, that to the public who wanted to hear that there is no deception, there is no fraud. Once again, this is just information thrown out to make people afraid and to keep them from voting. And we understand that. And so we have sent a statement saying, you know, we hear this all the time. We've asked for the evidence, we've asked for the data, we asked for the information. And it's easy to say there's fraud, there's deception, there's this, there's that. Even when they win, they say the same thing. Well, if it was fraud and deception in the last election, then why are these people sitting in the White House if there was so much deception and fraud? This is something used to just frighten people, to lie and say that these things exist and they don't. And as a result, we are letting people know, do not be deterred from voting. Do not give up your right to vote. There's nothing unusual that's happening in this election that would make you afraid. Once again, this is the ranting of the administration and now the press corps of that House. And so as a result, we are continuing to move forward. Yes. And there is no fraud, no deception. They have given us no data, no information, no real examples.
That was California Secretary of State Dr. Shirley Weber speaking about accusations of fraud in mail-in elections.
Oregon has not yet received federal funding for November SNAP payments, and it is expected to take weeks before any SNAP recipients begin to receive those benefits. The Trump administration is directing states to pay only half the amount people normally get for the month of November. A spokesperson for Oregon's Department of Human Services said, quote, it will take time for ODHS and our partners to make the technical updates and coordination needed to issue benefits accurately and fairly. Yesterday morning, Donald Trump posted that money for SNAP, quote, will be given only when the radical left Democrats open up government. A couple hours later, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said the administration will comply with court orders to restore the benefits. While Oregon ranks third among U.S. states for the highest percentage of residents who receive SNAP, the state ranks 21st in the percentage of residents living at or below the poverty line. Chris Baker is an administrator at the Oregon Hunger Task Force. Baker said, quote, Oregon has historically done a very good job of connecting people to services, end quote.
The Metro Council voted unanimously to redirect $500,000 in contingency funds to support food security. The Metro government serves 1.7 million people in the greater Portland area. Those extra dollars are intended to help people stay housed while SNAP funds are suspended federally. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program supports one in six Oregonians in buying food every month. Councillor Garrett Rosenthal asked the question of Val Galstad, the Deputy Director of Housing at Metro, at the meeting on Tuesday.
I think this is a great idea, and I'm glad we could move so quickly. My two questions are, as you know, the state has declared an emergency and has allocated $5 million, I believe. Do we have any idea how that's going to be distributed? Our metro area is about 50% of the state's population. Is it going to be administered that way? And have any of the other jurisdictions that we deal with shown some indication? I mean, they all have contingency reserves of some sort. And I just wonder if any of them have the leeway or the inclination to join us.
Yeah, I can take that. Thanks, Councillor Rosenthal. To your first question about the state's $5 million, I don't have the breakdown of exactly how that's going to be distributed and what's going to hit the metro region, but we can get that information from the Oregon Food Bank for you and send that out to you afterward if you would like. We have been in contact with the Oregon Food Bank about like how that money is going to be distributed, like what it's going to be predominantly used for, and it is going to be for bulk food buying largely. As far as your other question, you teed it up greatly. I was hoping I would get a chance to talk about this. Actually, today as well, many of our jurisdictional partners are considering this same topic. So today, Multnomah County is considering allocating $100,000. And I believe that they're specifically focusing on like school pantries. I know that Clackamas County is also considering allocating $100,000. And Washington County is considering allocating $250,000, I believe. That's the latest numbers I had, but that's maybe a little outdated. It's maybe 24 to 48 hours old. But in total, we're looking at between, $750,000 to $1 million in our region alone, just from a handful of our local government partners.
Thanks.
Just to put that into perspective, though, and maybe our COO, who is former COO, can back me up on this, Multnomah County person this morning that was attending said that normally on a monthly basis, it's about $5 to $6 million that Multnomah County alone puts out for SNAP benefits. And so this is a great movement forward on everybody's part, but it's not going to stem the tide if it goes any further than this, even if half the money comes through. So
that's correct.
Thank you. So this is a big step forward, but I just want everybody to realize that we are still going to be in an emergency and people will still be in need. So it's a big hole to fill.
That was an excerpt from the Metro Council meeting on Tuesday. We heard from Val Gasted, the Deputy Director of Housing at Metro, and Councillor Lynn Peterson and Garrett Rosenthal. Councillors voted unanimously to redirect $500,000 in contingency funds towards food security.
Portland City Council canceled its scheduled meeting this morning because at least four councillors said they wouldn't cross a picket line. 11 workers at the Independent Police Review, or IPR, office, represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Local 189, failed to reach an agreement with city negotiators by their deadline last night. Council President Ilana Pirtle-Ginny and Councilors Jamie Dunphy, Eric Zimmerman, and Dan Ryan said they wouldn't cross a picket line. Other councilors filed absences for other reasons, meaning there wouldn't be a quorum and the council couldn't do business. The Independent Police Review is set to be dissolved next year as the city's new Community Board for Police Accountability starts its work. voters passed it overwhelmingly in 2020 and gave the new board much more power than the IPR. Union bargainers want those IPR staffers to have a guaranteed job supporting the new office. The city says that would violate the city charter. Hiring has to come from the office's director.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jake Thomas from Street Roots about the latest article for the paper. It covers stagnation at the Oregon Prescription Drug Affordability Board. Then KBOO's Ken Jones brings us a preview of the Portland Youth Philharmonic's coming season. At 6, it's Flashpoints. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be rainy with strong winds with an overnight low of 49 degrees. The National Weather Service is warning of the small possibility of strong winds and even potential tornadoes in northwest Oregon and southwest Washington this evening. Wind gusts up to 60 miles per hour are possible because of a cool and unstable air mass over the area. Tomorrow, that rain continues with a daytime high of 59. Today in history, in 1838, Honduras declared its absolute independence from the Federal Republic of Central America, becoming a fully sovereign nation. The quote of the day is from American socialist activist Eugene Debs. Born this day in 1855, he said, quote, "I may not be able to say all I think, but I am not going to say anything that I do not think. I would rather 1,000 times be a free soul in jail than to be a sycophant and a coward in the streets."
Democrats notch key governor race victories, a possible sign of anti-Trump sentiment in the midterms. The government shutdown officially becomes the longest one ever. And California moves towards redistricting. With those stories and more, it's Zimone Perez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
You all chose leadership that will focus relentlessly on what matters most: lowering costs, keeping our communities safe, and strengthening our economy for every Virginian.
Virginia Governor-elect Abigail Spanberger cruised to victory yesterday, one of several Democrats benefiting from voters souring on President Donald Trump. The moderate former member of Congress and retired intelligence officer will be the first woman to be the state's chief executive. And in spite of a scandal caused by violent text messages he wrote, former Democratic Virginia delegate Jay Jones has ousted the incumbent state attorney general, Republican Jason Miaras. New Jersey's Democratic governor-elect, Representative Mikey Sherrill, survived an often ugly campaign to win soundly in what was expected to be a close race. A massive turnout, especially among young people, helped New York City Democratic mayoral nominee Zoran Mamdani beat disgraced former governor Andrew Cuomo and Republican nominee Curtis Sliwa. The Democratic Socialist Assemblyman will be the first Muslim American to lead the city. Votes in California will take days to count, but polls look good for Governor Gavin Newsom's effort to redraw the state's congressional districts in response to Republican mid-decade redistricting in Texas and other states. Trump and members of his movement are pointing to very isolated incidents to claim voting irregularity. Election machines briefly went down in one New Jersey county, and bomb threats in the state were quickly revealed as a hoax. But Trump and hard-right podcasters are arguing on social media that those are signs of vote rigging. Senators again failed to agree to fund the government, making the shutdown the longest in U.S. history. Majority Leader John Thune says Democratic senators' decisions to not support a clean continuing resolution ultimately hurts working people.
Democrats are injuring working people with their shutdown. Maybe Democrats have no idea what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck like so many Americans, including many government employees. But let me just tell them there are a whole lot of working people out there who can't afford to miss a single paycheck.
There are rumors of discussions under the dome on breaking the deadlock, but Democrats say they're frustrated by comments from Trump suggesting he would defy court orders by refusing to fund SNAP until the government reopens. A federal judge has also barred Trump from requiring proof of citizenship on federal voter registration forms, rebuking his efforts to take power to administer elections from the states. Conservation groups say an administration plan to roll back protections for public lands could damage some of the country's most sensitive natural areas. Vera Smith, with Defenders of Wildlife, says there is strong public support for the rule, giving conservation and recreation equal value to mining and grazing.
The repeal of the public lands rule really returns us to an outdated outdated extraction first model that doesn't really address the opportunities and challenges of a 21st century.
I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network at Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Trump wants to resume nuclear weapons testing immediately. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Trump wants the Defense Department to resume nuclear weapons testing immediately. As KJZZ's Gabriel Piatrazio reports, that's sending shockwaves around the West.
Prior to a moratorium imposed by Congress in 1992, the U.S. conducted over 1,000 nuclear tests, mostly done at the Nevada test site, even hundreds of above-ground detonations.
We can't fully rule it out. That would be extremely provocative.
Daryl Kimball is executive director of the Nonpartisan Arms Control Association.
I don't think people need to fear mushroom clouds on the desert floor outside of Las Vegas, but the very notion of resuming nuclear testing, in my view, is a disrespectful slap in the face to those who in the past have suffered from radiation poisoning from nuclear testing fallouts in the Mountain West.
Like Leslie Begay, a former Navajo uranium miner. He's also a Vietnam vet and cancer survivor, having a double lung transplant with 123 stitches in all.
That was the hardest thing I ever encountered. These are some of the things that people are going to go through.
Compensation for radiation exposure victims was revived this summer. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatrazio.
Residents of St. Lawrence Island in the Bering Sea have traditionally subsisted on walrus, whales, and fish. But availability of marine resources has been changing, and reindeer have become a staple. Now, Savunga is almost done building a meat processing facility that can turn it into a business. Ayolna Naiden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Richmond Tooley rides his four-wheeler across the wet tundra outside of Savunga. The mountains of black volcanic rock glisten behind him in the September sun, and the Bering Sea in front. Tooley is a third-generation chief reindeer herder. He pauses to spot the animals through his binoculars.
All summer there are reindeer out here.
St. Lawrence Island sits 100 miles west from mainland Alaska, with two villages on it, Savunga and Gamble. It's also home to several thousand free-range reindeer. In the late 1800s, famine struck the island, and the animals were introduced here as a food source. Today, the herd continues to support the island as warming conditions disrupt subsistence, and storms can hold up food deliveries for weeks. Now, Savunga is building a reindeer meat processing facility. Freeman Kinnicook is the business director of the Savunga Reindeer Commercial Company, a subsidiary of the village that will manage the facility. He says the plan is to slaughter reindeer about four times a year and sell it locally. In the future, there might be a chance to distribute it to other Alaska villages as well.
When we did those trial runs, we would sell on Facebook, and we couldn't keep up with the demand. It's undecided who the market is, but I know there's a market for it.
Perry Idiganak Pangowi is a subsistence hunter and one of the locals working on a project. Pangowi says the new facility already brought a much-needed influx of jobs to the village and might open new economic opportunities.
It would be nice to have our stores selling our local reindeer because it's hard to afford that steak. It's like $50, $60 for a piece of steak. And to me, reindeer tastes a lot better than steak.
Construction is scheduled to be completed in the coming weeks. With reporting from Savunga, I am Alona Naiden.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Scientists are working on a new management plan for the Colorado River. Many residents rely on it for drinking water, and a large share of the U.S. Latino population lives nearby. Mark Moran has more.
With Arizona in the grips of a prolonged drought, scientists are working on a new management plan for Colorado River water. As the state continues its unbridled growth, a growing number of residents rely on it for a lot of their drinking water. Dwindling water levels behind the dam on Lake Mead and a growing residential demand downstream are having a negative impact on the Colorado. Arizona State University conservation and sustainability expert Orlando Cazares says those factors are threatening $26 billion in recreational activities along the river, and they have an outsized impact on the Latino population.
One-third of Latinos in the U.S. live on the basin of the Colorado River. So that's a whole lot of families, a whole lot of businesses, a whole lot of tourists and other communities that rely on that area.
Cazares says unless policymakers can develop better water use policies, Lake Powell, which is supplied by the Colorado River, could reach Deadpool status by the end of the year. Coconino County, Arizona Supervisor Geronimo Vasquez says current policies, which allocate water to each of seven southwestern states in a federal compact, mean Arizona is getting less water.
And now as the federal government is pulling back some of its protections or some of its agreements in different ways, defunding certain federal agencies that are part of this, that means the states are going to have to figure it out. And that means people on the local level are going to have to get involved.
The National Wildlife Federation says at least 234,000 jobs rely on the Colorado River, including hunting, fishing, and rafting outfitters. I'm Mark Moran for Arizona News Connection.
November is National Caregiving Month, and caregiver advocates are calling attention to the struggles caregivers face and the value they contribute to the state. New data shows nearly a quarter of Oregonians provide care to someone in their family, many full-time. Isabella Charlet has the details.
In recognition of National Caregiving Month, advocates in Oregon are highlighting the immense value of family caregivers as well as the significant challenges they face. New data reveal that nearly a quarter of adults in the state, approximately 790,000 people, serve as family caregivers for older relatives, friends, or children with disabilities. Among them is Michael Schultz, who has cared for his wife for nearly 2 years after her cancer left her with limited mobility. He says her declining health meant he had to rapidly rethink and reorganize their daily lives.
You have to start problem solving very quickly. It became very clear that I would be living the life for a while of becoming a pretzel because you really have to bend and shape everything that's going on.
The report found more than 40% of caregivers face financial setbacks such as debt or drained savings, while a third experienced high emotional stress. AARP Oregon is hosting events this month to celebrate caregivers and offer resources. Details can be found at aarp.org/Oregon. Family caregivers are the backbone of the state's long-term care system, says AARP Oregon State Director Bandana Shrestha. She says they provide medical care such as giving injections and managing medications with little or no training. According to the report, family caregivers provide nearly $9 billion in unpaid care each year in Oregon.
Sometimes we take for granted that our neighbors, our family members are caring for us and contributing this immense service, not only to the family members and the friends, but really to our society at large.
At the federal level, AARP is advocating for the Credit for Caring Act. This legislation would offer a $5,000 tax credit to help family caregivers recoup some of their out-of-pocket expenses not covered by insurance. Shrestha says this month serves as a reminder that everyone will either provide or need care at some point, and that caregivers deserve appreciation throughout the entire year.
Thank you for all you're doing. You're not alone. We are here. There are a lot of resources out there in the community. I hope you get to take some rest and connect with your loved ones.
For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
KBOO news poet Dan Raphael thinks that Donald Trump's and the Republican Party's heartlessness are not bluffs.
Shut down, break down, already broke, ain't no joke. Around one of every eight Americans used to receive SNAP benefits. Donnie don't care if people go hungry, or maybe he doesn't consider anyone worth than 10 million people, so they don't deserve health care either. Donnie and Project 2025 want to keep government as we know and prefer it shut down, redefining government to mean things that make Trump richer and pay the armies and polices to keep anything from changing. Will the Democrats play the short game and surrender to reopen government for another month or two? Or maybe yesterday's elections will give them some backbone. Remember, you can't trust anything the Republican leadership says. Don't bother to fact-check Trump. If he said it, it's probably a lie. And a shout-out to Sean Charles Dunn on trial now for throwing a sub sandwich at a Border Control agent in D.C. At least an earlier court struck down the charge of felonious assault, although subways can be a little deadly. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 5th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Dan Raphael, and Ken Jones. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineers are Ray Bodwell and Carmina Flores. Special thanks to Lauren Schmidt, Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Zamon Perez, and Mark Moran. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jezaniah Hawthorne.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined by Street Roots reporter Jake Thomas to talk about his latest story for the paper. It's called Coming Up Empty. A state board in Oregon tried to take steps towards regulating drug prices. It's been unable to accomplish its central tasks. Welcome to the show, Jake.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to speak with us. Your new story talks about Oregon's prescription drug